Blog Talk Radio.
To the Ed and Fuzz Show. Ayo. I want to introduce my partner in crime as usual, Fuzzy Biscuits.
Hello.
Woke up to a text this morning. We'd heard yesterday how Scott Hall, aka Razor Ramon, was on life support. And then I wake up to the text this morning where you sent me how Kevin Nash was saying they're going to take them off life support today, just have his family together so they can say their last goodbyes. And, you know, to start off the show, Monday Night Raw, WWE confirmed that Razor Ramon had passed away. First, let me preface, before we get into that, because it's a lot to cover, but before we get into that, I do want to say, Big E, I know you don't listen to the show, and I'm not even going to Wallamania this time to go see if you're going to be there. You're probably going to be healing up, but, like, you know, best wishes, positive vibes, you know, for Big E Langston, however you know him. He had that bad neck injury, that bad spot on Friday Night SmackDown, and he has a broken neck, but it's the best case of the worst case scenario, so we hope to see him in the ring soon. We've seen some wrestlers in the past come back from such serious injuries, and it could have been worse. But it's been kind of a sad week in wrestling. I'm not gonna lie, a lot of good stuff, a lot of cool stuff. But and then the Razor Ramon thing. I'm gonna let you start because I've already babbled enough, and I will be babbling some more. Well, what's your legacy? What's your impression? What's your legacy? What's the first thing you think of when you think of Razor Ramon or Scott Hall, however you want to call?
I'm going to say this. I'm going to start. But what I'm going to start on, I really, you know, want your opinion. So one of the things I thought about Scott Hall, essentially Razor Ramon, because, I mean, that was his driving character throughout. We saw aspects of Razor Ramon throughout, even though he wasn't Razor Ramon. That was his persona. Now, my question was, and I don't know why this popped into my head, but I was like, let's be real, all right? He was not the best white Latino. And it kind of brought me to another bad white actor doing Latino. But that was Al Pacino. So I'm like, and I was like, you know what? It does kind of, like, I don't know. I just drew a correlation, and I'm like, he seems to be bad. Nobody complains about Al Pacino being a horrible stereotypical Latino as, you know, Tony Montana. And I feel like Razor Ramon hit that level. Like, everybody knew he was a white dude, and everybody knew he was bad. They didn't care. But that's not, you know, as a Latino, what do you think of that?
It's funny. I was discussing this with friend of the show, Bonnie, who's Mexican. And part of it, here's several things, several factors to that. Part of it is my youth at the time. You know, I'm still, you know, in my teens, kind of, I'm still figuring as first generation kid, I'm still figuring out my place in the world. I lived in two worlds where it's like this immigrant family. I was very insular. You've met my family. Is it fair to say Mama Molina was strict?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and so I wasn't thinking about those dynamics at that age, but even as I got older, comfortable in my own skin, comfortable in my own grasa, comfortable in my own blood, if you will, it didn't bother me because I knew it was parodying Scarface. So if I'm mad at Razor Ramon, I got to be mad at Scarface and Al Pacino. Here's the problem with that. To me, I'm not saying it's the greatest movie. I'm sorry. I'm not those fallback movie people. But to me, Scarface is my favorite movie of all time. I think only other than the only other movie I put above that as my favorite movie might be True Romance. And so if I'm going to accept Scarface as my favorite movie, I gotta accept it with all its warts. Now, the thing about both Razor Ramon and Tony Montana is that they were such cool characters, such the epitome of the bad guy being cool. It wasn't even the anti-hero. You know, one was a drug dealer, a high distribution level drug dealer, kingpin, and Razor Ramon always was the flashy Cubano, you know, wannabe, you know, like, I don't know if pimp's the right word for him to describe him, but it had that drug dealer vibe that Tony Montana had. I've always been drawn to heels, even though the machismo, exactly. And that's another thing. Growing up in Latino culture, you grow up in this hyper machismo, and it was a parody of that in a lot of ways, and I kind of always understood that because the whole hyper machismo thing in male culture, in male Latino culture, and in my family was always turned me off to the point that I get punked by my own family sometimes. Oh, he's soft. You know what I mean? Like, because I don't believe in a lot of this hyper machismo bullshit. But it was cool seeing it as a character in Tony Montana. That's a credit to Al Pacino's talents as an actor. It was cool seeing it in Scott Hall, and that's a credit to him selling this gimmick to the public and the public just totally buying it. I don't think this character works without Tony Montana, but I also think this character doesn't work without Scott Hall. We saw elements of this. It kind of leads me into this. I go back to Scott Hall when he was the Diamond Stud, teaming up with Vinny Vegas, who later would be Diesel, in WCW, doing jobs in WCW to Sting and to, like, you know, Brian Pillman. I remember the Diamond Stud. And so, to me, when he did Scott Hall, when he did Razor Ramon in Hindsight, he just kind of turned the volume up and put that Latino machismo flavor to it. I think in the hands of any other wrestler, this fails. Like, I can't picture. Imagine franchise Dean Douglas trying to pull this thing off. Imagine Diamond Dallas Page, who's very good at what he does, trying to pull this off. For whatever reason, this character clicked that they gave him. We don't even know if it was his choice, because as we know, Vince just gives you the gimmick, and it's up to you to make it work. Vince gave Terry Taylor the Red Rooster gimmick. Vince gave the polka dots to Dusty Rhodes as a punishment. He made, and Red Rooster's gimmick did not work, but Dusty and the polka dots still brings, you know, still elicits great memories for me. Just as much as, you know, the American Dream and NWA does. And so I think it's a credit to the talent of Scott Hall that I understand if other Latinos are offended, especially younger Latinos, because they're quote unquote more woke, for lack of a better word. But for me, being of that Scarface era, being that Scarface is my favorite movie, I can only speak for me. I am not King Latino, so I can't speak for all my brothers and sisters. But for me, it didn't offend me. It didn't bother me. Now, a friend of the show, Bonnie, it's complicated, a little complicated for her, because she's like, it bugs me. But he was just so cool. But it, again, goes to the credit to Scott Hall of making this gimmick work. Ayo, is a bad, yo, I will say, Scott Hall has a better fake Cuban accent than Al Pacino did in Scarface. Mm. You know? And I think that because we so closely associate that Razor Ramon character to Tony Montana, and, you know, we could have a whole podcast about how the movie Scarface influenced hip-hop culture, how it influenced movie culture, how it influenced, it was, you know, it was so, it was for a movie that quote-unquote stunk to the bougie film people, Like, it transcended its lot in life. To me, that movie's about the immigrant story in America, doing it by any means necessary. I'm not condoning what Tony Montana did, but that's a pass from people that have taken in immigration. Look at the Kennedys. The Kennedys were bootleggers. So, you know, but again, that's a different dynamic that isn't related to Scott Hall. It's more about the connection of, you know, someone in creative was like, let's do that Tony Montana thing with you. And he made that shit work. I think in the hands of any other wrestler, any other white wrestler, this does not work. It looks as bad as the Mexicools, or as bad as Tensai, or I'm trying to think other bad stereotypes. It's bad as Missing Link, Akeem the African Dream, in lesser, but Scott Hall made it work. And that's a credit to how damn good he was at his craft. And you know, it's funny, I was just discussing this, like, it's complicated, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I if you're Latino, I could understand you being offended by the character, but by that token, don't come at me saying you like, don't come quoting Scarface to me, because I'm gonna call you out on it. Like, there's a hypocrisy. That's just me though. I'm not King Latino. I can't speak for my brothers and sisters, so you know. But that it is complicated, but that's where I'm at mentally, in my comfort zone with this. Scott Hall was cool as hell. He made that work. That made that gimmick work. It was brilliant, and it led to magic in the ring. Let's talk about his iconic ladder match with Shawn Michaels. You're the Shawn Michaels stan. I'll let you ponder on that.
I mean, like, we talked briefly off the grid. I think I used the word pioneering, so, which I did hesitate a little to use, but then I was like, you know what, though? I feel like by setting the standard for this match, which has become one of the most iconic wrestling matches of this modern era, I think he definitely was a pioneer as far as the ladder match goes. I think if you're a wrestling fan, you know, our age or even a little bit younger, I think you don't think ladder match without this match popping up in, you know, your head. This is the match every time ladder match, I think of this ladder match. So it's like not only the gold standard of ladder matches, but it's the one you think about. You know, I think I've already kind of said enough. Like I said, I kind of feel like I haven't had a lot of time to process the reach of this, but I feel like just talking about what the ladder match is today, to the casual fan, to the diehard fan, I would say one of the most iconic matches of this modern era. And you can't help but question, would it be like that if it weren't for this match? This match was on the big stage, but it was also an iconic match. And I think what the ladder match has become kind of that is a testament to, you know, the importance of this match and what Hall and Shawn Michaels did that night, what they put on.
To your point, I think it set the bar, and it was a high bar, you know, because I think, if I remember correctly, I think Razor Ramon may have had a ladder match with Bret Hart. I have to look it up. And you know I'm the biggest Bret Hart fan. To this day, I have beef with Shawn Michaels because I am a Bret Hart guy. But that match did not reach the quality of Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels at Mania for the Intercontinental title, you know, ladder match. I think it set the standard where I think in the territories you had seen the ladder match. But again, it goes back to how cool Scott Hall was. And he had great chemistry with Shawn Michaels. There is zero denying, you know, the click is a click, polarizing group, however you feel about them, you know, however careers they may have stunted or ended. Big Van Vader comes to mind, Shane Douglas comes to mind, but we're not going to talk about that. We're focusing on the positive. And the chemistry that those two had in the ring, it was magic. And I personally have the Hardys versus Edge and Christian above that, but we're talking about, like, splitting hairs here. We're talking about, like, 1A and 1B. And I think for – I can't speak on international wrestling culture, but on American wrestling culture, that set the bar as to what a quality ladder match looks like. And we've seen plenty of good ones. Look, we saw one at Revolution that was pretty damn good. You know what I mean? I remember Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens when they were El Generico and Kevin Steen in Ring of Honor. They had a great banger of a – they call it Ladder Wars over there. A banger. Insane spot where Kevin Owens just did a pile driver on Generico. But, again, none of that happens, I feel like, that Razor Ramon, Shawn Michaels ladder match at WrestleMania. And I think, and we just, and I said this off the air, it cemented Scott Hall's place as being a champion when the Intercontinental title mattered way a lot more than it does today, where it's passed around like COVID. You know, back then it was like, it was a stepping stone to the main event, you know. And I think it also set the standard for, it set the path, let me rephrase that, it set the path for Shawn Michaels becoming Mr. WrestleMania, which whatever my issue with Shawn Michaels, there is no denying he is Mr. WrestleMania. There's no disputing that. I'm a Bret Hart fan, I can kick and scream all I want, but I think that was the beginning of that leap for Shawn Michaels. And in wrestling, you're only as good as your dance partner, you're only as good as your rival, you know. Randy Savage had Steamboat. Steamboat had Flair. You know, Funk had Flair and Cactus Jack. And you know what I mean? And that's Shawn Michaels is the perfect dance partner.
And I think another thing to add to the, as far as the, like, belt, the Intercontinental belt, I think back in that time, too, people kind of built their careers as the Intercontinental champion. It was not, you know, it was the stepping stone, but also – people made their name as Intercontinental Champion. And I think of people like Tito Santana, Steamboat, Savage. You know, these, I think you could realistically say these three guys, you know, built who they were as IC, at least in the WWF, WWE, as the Intercontinental Champion.
Damn, son. No,
like,
love
we
from
think of Randy Savage more of Intercontinental Champion than Heavyweight Champion, even though he was a multiple-time Heavyweight Champion.
I agree with that, but as I was saying, no love, Kurt Henning.
Oh, of course.
By the way, before I didn't get to watch as much AWA growing up. I didn't have ESPN, so I didn't have access to AWA, and they kind of gave trickles of it on Spanish TV in New York back in the day. But yo, let's not forget. Scott Hall was tag team AWA tag team champion with Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect. Like, picture that tag team, which they would reunite in the NWO, by the way. They would eventually reunite, you know, in the NWO, which will actually, that's a great segue to where I'm going. I think as much as the ladder match, we got to talk about the NWO. Today's, look,
of course,
we talked about there. To me, I don't think there's any dispute. Greatest faction of all time is the Four Horsemen. I don't care if it's in Japan, in the U.S., to me, the greatest faction of all time. And I'm talking about the iteration of Arn, Tully, Rick, and Barry Windham. That iteration. That said, the modern day stable, as we know it, there is no D-Generation X without the NWO. There is no Bullet Club. The idea of even a Bullet Club, like the Bullet Club is a facsimile, a replica, a not as good a copy. And I'm a Bullet Club fan to this day saying it. But even the notion, even like down to the colors of black and white, the whole concept of Bullet Club International, doesn't happen without the NWO. Ingobernables, Mexico or Japan, Chaos. Good friends is what Danhausen calls them. Best friends, but that's a stable. Really, Yuta, you know, Chucky T and Treparetta and Danhausen and Statlander and like, yo, again, that's a stable. these stables, the idea of stables doesn't happen. Violent by Design and Impact, whatever. Whatever your favorite stable is. Without the NWO, that set the bar. Again, we're back to that word. That set the bar to what a cool stable, a cool click, pun intended, looks like. Because it was kind of an extension of the locker room in WWE, where it was Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, X-Pac. That, you know, that was the backstage click. And it kind of spilled into real life. That's another thing. They broke that fourth wall. The incident in Madison Square Garden, where it was the last match Kevin Nash and Scott Hall had in Madison Square Garden, and they were drinking beers, even though one was face and one was heel. All of them were hugging each other and drinking beer. The idea of breaking the fourth wall, that starts with with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. Their careers are so intertwined, you know. I can't – and look, related to the NWO, come on, the greatest swerve of all time. I'm saying Scott Hall was involved in that. And again, even with the NWO
thing, greatest swerve / heel turn of all time.
Yes. I remember watching, this is back in the days of black box bootleg cable, you know what I mean, where everybody stole cable. I don't care what anybody says. Stop fronting like you didn't steal cable. Like, in fact, you know, like, if you paid for cable, you was kind of being a sucker. I'm sorry. I realize it's illegal, but I apologize, but it's the truth. My jaw just dropped when Hogan did that swerve. That was the last guy I ever expected to swerve the way he did. To this day, I remember this. But again, that all starts with Scott Hall going to WCW, jumping over the rail when some jobbers were wrestling, grabbing the mic
outside,
and goes, "You know who?" He goes, "You know who I am." And yo, he was smart enough where he couldn't use the name Razor Ramon for obvious reasons, for copyright reasons, but he didn't have to say anything. He just had to say, "Ayo, you know who I am." You know what I mean? In that accent and in that – and so, like, it starts with Scott Hall because then Kevin Nash comes the following week. Then the following week, they powerbomb Eric Bischoff through a table. They threw him off the stage, onto a table. And that set up Bash at the Beach, and it was Hogan and Sting and Randy Savage and then the swerve – or you know, it, then the swerve happened. And it was – it was brilliant, you know what I mean? Keeping in that vein, with part of being the NWO, you know what else that they did for the boys? That everybody should thank that man when they go to his funeral? Today's WWE, today's AEW, today's Impact, every wrestler in this business owes Hall and Nash a thank you for the concept of guaranteed contract, where wrestlers were not dependent on the gate, or who, you know, how many pay-per-views are sold, or, you know, appearance fees. No, the notion of guaranteed contract. No, pro wrestlers now have better guaranteed contracts than NFL players. I said it. There's a reason guys like Brock Lesnar or women like Paige VanZant and Ronda Rousey and guys like Riddle and Filthy Tom Lawler have made a career, have jumped from MMA to pro wrestling, because it pays a little bit better. It's guaranteed money. You don't have to deal with Dana White and his show money and, you know, win money and then hope you get a bonus, hope you knock somebody out, like, in a highlight reel type of KO so that you can get a bonus. Nah, like, in a lot of ways, Scott Hall changed that. Everybody in his business that's ever been in the ring and had a guaranteed a contract owes that man. The man's not a saint, you know what I mean? But he changed professional wrestling in the ring. He changed professional wrestling out of the ring. And I guess this brings me to the other thing, the demons. You know what I mean? The demons. I don't know. I always feel awkward calling it demons, because I have friends that are going through that struggle whether it's alcohol or recreational chemicals, you know, I don't like calling it demons because I feel like I am dismissing their pain. You know what I mean? It was sad watching Scott Hall fall as far as he did, hitting rock bottom in such a public way, where he was at an indie show and it was just bad. If you've ever seen it, I mean, ESPN did a 30 for 30 on it, a short 30 for 30 or E60. Sorry, it wasn't 30 for 30, but E60 on it. And it was sad. It was sad. And to see him accept Diamond Dallas Page's help the way that he did, to have a friend like that literally open his home and be patient. Because if you've ever had friends or family and seen the struggle, it's not easy on those around them either, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I'd say for, like, a quick pause in the vein of, you know, the tribute to Razor Ramon, let's give Diamond Dallas Page his flowers while he's still here. And because he's done this for several wrestlers. So I just want to briefly, while he's here, give Diamond Dallas Page his flowers for obvious reasons.
So I learned today that Diamond Dallas Page, through his DDP yoga, helped Big Damo. He was one of the, not Viking Raiders. He was with Sanity, who was Nikki Cross's husband, Big Damo. I'm sorry. It was Ibar. He helped Ibar. When Ibar got hurt, remember that bad dive that he took from the Viking Raiders?
Yeah.
I still call him War Machine, sorry. And he was out for like a whole year. Diamond Dallas Page took him into his house and helped him with his rehab through his DDP yoga. When Ciampa broke his neck, who took him into his house? Diamond Dallas Page. And help him. And look, I mean, I still kind of cringe a little bit when I see Ciampa take certain spots, but like you can tell like the seriousness of his neck injury. And Diamond Dallas Page is opening his home for Big E, who again, you know, this is Big E. Wrestling attracts a lot of bad people, a lot of scumbags sometimes, especially the older era, that Razor Ramon era. Let's be honest. There were some horrible human beings. Shawn Michaels wasn't the best human being in the locker room. He'll be the first one to tell you, and he's turned his life around. You know, everyone I've talked to who's been in the industry or around the industry or covered the industry, they all say the same thing about Big E. Just one of the most genuinely nicest guys on the planet. And to your point about DDP getting his flowers, yes, he's like already extended the invitation to open his home. He got Jake the Snake Roberts, whose issues of abuse, abused as a kid, as well as the drug issues, he saved that man's life, you know? And you're right. We should, while he is around, we should give Diamond Dallas Page his roses because he helped, like, yo, he resurrected Razor Ramon. He was never the same, obviously. The drugs, they catch up to you. They just do. It's just the nature of addiction. But he put him back in a healthy and happy place where he was doing WWE appearances, and he was going, you know, and he went to the Hall of Fame. And he was, you know, you could still see the spirit in him that, A-O, you know what I mean? And a lot of that credit goes to Diamond Dallas Page, who really is, you know, I'm not a religious person by most standards, but he's doing the Lord's work or the deity's plural work, whatever deity you believe in. Just a good human being, you know, in that sense that he understands how taxing. Look, as we learned this weekend between Razor Ramon and Big E, you know, wrestling haters always call this shit fake, you know, and that always bothers me. It's choreographed for sure. It's scripted for sure. But Big E's neck did not break kayfabe. That is real bones that cracked when he landed on his head. Razor Ramon, you know, a lot of his addiction issues are dealing with pain, painkillers, of mixing painkillers with alcohol. That becomes a lifestyle for wrestlers, for basketball players, for NFL players, for boxers. And that leads to some serious addiction issues, and, you know. And so this is one of those days, like, I don't want to hear your BS about fake. You know, those demons that Scott Hall had were not fake. That neck injury that Ciampa had was not fake. That neck injury that Big E had is not fake. Hayabusa out in Japan, his neck injury when he went paralyzed, or draws, that's not fake. That's real. Like, you know, I think, you know, obviously us as fans, we respect the work that they put in to entertain us, which is really what it comes down to. They're doing this to entertain us. It's a hard way to earn your living, you know what you think?
Oh, for sure. And, I mean, it definitely, you know, does. That's the sad part, is that this is far from a Scott Hall issue. You know, this is, you know, I hate to say it, but it's kind of par for the course.
I will say, one of the things about this new generation of wrestler, you know, a lot of the old-timers criticize the younger guys like Adam Cole and like the Bucks and Kenny Omega, although they're in their 30s and 40s, but a lot of them criticize them because they're video game geeks. You know, these guys go on the road and they play video games. They're always on the road and they play video games all day. Like, they become, if it wasn't for porn stars and pro wrestlers, Twitch wouldn't exist as a platform, because people gravitate to go watch Adam Cole play video games and interact with fans. People gravitate to watch Zelina Vega play Street Fighter or whatever game she's into, because she's very big into gaming on Twitch. You know, Ronda Rousey's made a second career, second life out of video games. And it's like, well, what would you rather have? Would you rather have somebody addicted to playing Madden, or would you have someone addicted to Soma? I know what my answer is. You know what I mean? Like, screw that. Let them have their video game fun. And the culture of wrestling has changed. Where, you know, I remember Chris Jericho saying, like, he was kind of like, man, these guys are boring, because it's like after a show, we'd all go out and party and have, you know, go hit a strip joint or go to a bar till closing, try to pick up women, whatever, whatever. And it's like a lot of these guys, they go back to their hotel rooms and go play video games. You know, but I think that's good. I think the sad part and the lesson to be learned in the death of guys like Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, is that, you know, we learn from other people's mistakes, if that makes sense.
We should.
Theoretically, we should. But I think as an industry, look, we just had a major Me Too movement in pro wrestling. So I'm not saying these guys are saints. I'm not saying these guys are, you know, going to heaven or none of that. I'm not saying that either. But what I'm saying is, when you hear some of the stories, there's a reason Dark Side of the Ring exists, right? It's because a lot of, you know, wrestling had or has even to this day a carny mentality, you know, a circus mentality, and it drew. I think one of the things that pro wrestling has in common with stand-up comedy, is that it draws broken people. Some of the best comedy comes from broken people. I think Richard Pryor comes to mind. My man set himself on fire freebasing. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's Scott Hall level of degeneracy, if you will. You know? And I think wrestling kind of does the same thing. The other thing, obviously, is that, yo, you have 30 seconds to entertain this crowd, or they're going to boo you out the building. You know what I mean? Like, your promo or your moves better be good. Your jokes better be good, because this crowd is like, entertain me, MF-er. Entertain me. You know what I mean? And so, you know, and you know, with broken souls sometimes comes demons. And again, I feel awkward using that word, but I don't know what other word to use. It is, you're chasing dragons and haunted by demons, you know. That's the only way I could frame it. But I digress, you know. Yeah, the Scott Hall thing, man. It's to your point of his legacy, I'm seeing, I don't know about you, but I'm seeing in my social media timeline, people that I know haven't watched wrestling in decades, plural, decades, that are sending their positive energy to Razor Ramon and his legacy. And it goes back, it goes full circle to what we were talking about Tony Montana. No matter how you feel about that fake Latino machismo thing that he did, it hit a nerve. It hit a nerve. Like, people remember, I had a coworker text me who hasn't, who's like, I have my little office set up where I have my little belts. I'll send you the photo. And I have my little replica World Cup, but I have my little belts, and like, it's an AEW belt, I think the Universal title and WWE Cruiserweight title. I have them kind of lined up on my desk. And, you know, one of my coworkers is like, oh, you know, I haven't seen wrestling in a long time. And like, oh, that's kind of cool how you got that set up. And he was one of the first people to text me. I mean, I already saw the news, but he was one of the first people to text me. Oh, actually, he said, "Ayo," you know, like, "Ayo, Razor Ramon passed away." And it goes again to like how we started the show. However complicated things may look, especially through the lens of this modern day 2022 woke era, however you may think it's quote unquote negative or bad, yo, you weren't there and you didn't see it and you didn't feel that energy. And if you were there, you know exactly why people are sad, and you would understand why people mark out when we talk about the Shawn Michaels ladder match and the NW Swerve and the Wolfpack and the Red and Black. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like you had to be there to understand it. And it's very rare that you see that in wrestling. I think, I want to say the last wrestler I kind of saw that was I think we just said, would it be fair to say like Randy Savage?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
You know, that's kind of where we're at. Like, and honestly, are you surprised? I kind of am. That, like, so many people, which just goes to show, by the way, how big Razor Ramon and the NWO were. But, like, are you surprised? I'm kind of a little surprised that we're talking about it in the same vein that we are at Randy Savage.
I'm honestly not really that surprised, because I think where Randy Savage took it further in one arena, Razor Ramon took it further in another arena, if that makes sense.
It does. It does.
So I think it's an apples and oranges type thing, maybe. You know what I mean?
I do, because with Randy Savage, he had the Slim Jims thing, like, and then the Spider-Man movie. I think a lot of people remember him. I know people that remember him just as the Slim Jim guy, which is funny to me because it's like, yo, that's probably the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. And I think that's the show I want to do next week. I want to talk about the era of when the Intercontinental belt mattered. I think Razor was the last relevant Intercontinental Champion. Friend of the show, Bonnie, was arguing The Miz. I think there's a case for that. But I think the last guy that made the Intercontinental title matches feel like a big fight feel, like just like it's like the co-main event or the people's main event, as they say in MMA nowadays, when there's a fight that's like a Justin Gaethje versus Tony Ferguson. Like, that's like the people's championship. Like that, you know what I mean? Like, but there was always like, you know, whether it was Mr. Perfect, Shawn Michaels, Randy Savage, you mentioned Tito Santana. Like, for some wrestlers, that was their peak, and it was a cool peak because the belt mattered. I think AEW is trying to do that with the, I always confuse them, TNT title is the men's one. Well, both of them, the TNT and the TBS title. I think they're trying to have that old school vibe of like, you know, like the TV title in ECW mattered as much.
Titles, what comes to mind.
Yeah, but I feel like with the TNT and TBS title, it's like it's. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, what I'm saying is like I think they're trying to. with ECW, there was just the heavyweight title and the TV title. And with WCW / NWA, they had the, you know, they had the heavyweight title, they had the U.S. title, and they had the TV title. Now, I used to love the TV title because guys like Bobby Eaton, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Sting held it at one point. I think Brian Pillman might have had the TV title. Like, again, it was a little bit lower in the card, but it you know, it felt like those belts mattered. I think WWE has kind of poisoned the well in making it, well, the belts don't matter. It's the, you know, the, I understand the theory, and this is true in boxing as it is in MMA, as it is in pro wrestling. The belt doesn't make the champion makes the belt, meaning like whoever's holding the belt adds gravitas to the belt. And we've noticed that with how the Intercontinental and U.S. titles have been downgraded, where, again, they get passed around like they're the flu. And so, you know, I think AEW is trying to do that, add a sense of gravitas. Like when Scorpio Sky won this week against Sammy Guevara, it felt like it mattered. You know what I mean? I haven't had that feeling. I mean, I did recently just because, like, you know, it was good to see Ricochet get that push. Like, something positive happened in him to the belt. But at the same time, it's one of those things where it's like, well, it's still, like, it's so secondary that sometimes it's like they'll put the Intercontinental title match on the pre-show. Would have been absurd back in the day. That would have been absurd back in the day. And I think matches – I think we saw that with Cody Rhodes versus Brody Lee in the dog collar match for the TNT title. I think we saw that with Sammy Guevara and Cody Rhodes. I think we saw that with Sammy Guevara and Scorpio Sky. It felt that way with Rusev, Abiro, when he had the TV title. Wow, you got me doing it now. The the TNT title, you know what I mean? Like, they gave it a sense of worth more so than they do in WWE. Jade Cargill carries herself like a champion. You know what I'm saying?
And she has a very relevant title run going on right now.
Absolutely. A Goldberg-like run, by the way.
Yeah.
Let's not get into it. It's not about who's next. It's about who's left. I love that line. Mm-hmm. Yo, well, but again, we are not only clients, you know, we're not only fans, we're also clients type of thing. Was that whatever the Cy Sterling is, like, we are stans of Jade Cargill. There's a lot of haters out there. Haters! But
I've been on that wagon
from day one. She's still green, don't get it twisted, but yeah, I'm with you. I'm a big Jade Cargill stan. But yeah, we're running out of time. We got like a minute and a half left, but you know, we'll discuss next week as it relates to Razor Ramon, because like I said, I think he's the last of those classic Intercontinental title holders where it was like, yo, like, you looked out for the Intercontinental title. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have that same gravitas. And again, a lot of that has to do with matches like the ladder match that he had with Shawn Michaels, not to sound redundant. But, you know, we're going to end it here. We got a minute left. 17 days left till our road to WrestleMania ends. We are going to the New Japan show. We are going to the Impact show. We are going to the AAA Lucha show. We are going to the WrestleCon show. We are going to night one of Mania. We are going to night two. I believe we will be on Instagram and on Facebook Live, dropping in and out. We are going to do a live of Buzz's first trip to Bucky's. If you know, you know. I'm sorry. Like, I'm not going to let you – I'm sorry I'm not giving you a chance to comment on that. We'll talk about that next week as our road to WrestleMania continues. But we are going to do a live of Buzz's trip ever, first trip ever to the greatest truck stop in the world, Bucky's. And y'all think I'm joking that I'm amped about this trip. Anyway, we'll do this again next week. All right, man. Peace.
Late.